Welcome to Side by Side, a podcast where I, Robert Kwong, take you inside conversations with artists, creatives, healers, and warriors taking the charge in their transformational story. Today's guest is Dr. Lauren Borden, a leadership and empowerment coach who blends practical application with spiritual growth in her work with clients and organizations. Lauren holds a PhD in industrial organizational psychology and has been trained in internal family systems and neuro-linguistic programming. In this conversation, we dive inside her mission to cultivate leadership as a means towards integrated health, her advocacy for emotional fluency, and why the word veriditas captures the essence of her work. But I'm so glad to be able to catch up. It's been a minute since we've been able to have like an in-depth conversation, which we used to have on a weekly basis. And I'll just say for listeners, the last time that Lauren and I connected, it was through coaching and coaching training. And we were together for like a little bit over a year, which is quite a long time for a partnership like that. But since then, I'm really curious to, we caught up a little bit earlier, but how's life been since this would have been like the end of 2021? And I've seen some of your work evolve. So I'll just start general. How's everything since then?
Oh my gosh. Thank you so much for asking. And thank you for having me, Robert. It's been so cool, like really and truly an honor to be able to watch your journey and like your development and growth. And like you said, have this front row seat for so long. So it's just been really an honor. One, it's crazy. I mean, I feel like the last few years have just been, I'm sure everybody says that, just a total whirlwind. But the last year has been really, really transformative for me. I feel like actually we haven't spoken in about a year, I think. Like we went out to lunch that one
time. Right. Yes. And I was starting to share like, you know, musical aspects and how I find it naturally evolves into, you know, coaching or personal development. I remember talking to you then as like little seeds we were planting. And then here we are. I mean, in such a short amount of time, so many people's lives have changed so much. So I'm sure that's the same for you as well, since we last had lunch.
Totally. And it, you know, this year was really pivotal for me because I think actually when we first met, my business and my life, it felt like was a little segmented, you know, like I was on my spiritual path and then I had my very practical work. Even with my clients in my coaching, I had these two sort of lanes where it was like, okay, I have my executive coaching clients and my like coaching clients who are working on building their business. And then I've got a very woo, very spiritual, very healing oriented, like diving to the depths with people, teaching people to channel, like, which I know you're familiar with that work, even through Jess and like all of that, who Jess is one of our mentors, both of us, who teaches intuitive development. And those two lanes didn't touch for a really long time. And this year was really big for me because I got the call to go back to corporate. And I don't even think I've told you this, but it was like about bringing spirit and spirituality and healing and a lot of those more alternative modalities to leaders and organizations. And initially when I got that download, I was like, no, we are not doing that. We're not bringing human design and all of these things to like organizations. And so, but I listened and it's been a whirlwind, like a wild year because of that. Like it's forced just a lot of growth on my end and like learning how to have what feels like one foot in both worlds and not chameleon myself or segment myself. And then just a lot of really fast development personally. Like, you know, I started experimenting with plant medicine. I don't know if we've talked about that.
We have to get into that. Okay.
I know. There are a lot of possible angles here. So, yeah.
But, you know, I understand wanting to bridge the gap between old world, I don't know, corporate business world and executive world with the spiritual world, the intuitive world, the creative world, right? That's sort of, I think we have that in common in many ways. And you're someone who talks about, as a leadership coach or a coach who emphasizes leadership training, that true leadership or authentic leadership is also a spiritual path. Do you want to dive into a little bit of how you see that working and why it's important to bring spirit or just a different perspective to this world of leadership cultivation for individuals and also within organizations?
Oh my gosh, such a big question. And there's so many angles.
No
to
pressure.
The first thing that comes to mind, and I'm slightly out of my lane here in terms of like the astrology of it. I don't know if you've read anything about like the astrology of like the transition that we moved through. And I think it was 2020 or 2021 where we were moving from like the age of Pisces to the age of Aquarius.
Yes, and so the Aquarian age, right? Yeah.
And so a lot of that means like where it's about like collective health and the health of organizations and the health of communities, like really taking a look at how like the individual impacts the collective. And that's one of the places I just love working and thinking about from the perspective of leadership is like, how does your leadership, how does your healing and your development impact the collective, impact the people around you, impact your relationships, mm-hmm. and how can you deepen your own work so as to create more health outside of you? That's kind of part one. And I see that transition happening for, I think, a lot of people where these old paradigms where like everyone could sort of stay in their own lane and just focus on themselves or whatever, it's like getting shaken loose and we're really kind of being asked to look out really outside of ourselves, which I mean, isn't necessarily new, but anything that feels like it's not that is getting cleared. Mm-hmm. So that's one part of it. And then the other part in terms of the collision between these two things is really no matter where your life takes you, and whatever your fullest expression is on this earth, like when you're in this conversation about purpose and being fully in alignment, and whether that's being a business owner or being a leader, it's going to ask you to grow spiritually. It's going to ask you to deepen your healing. Like, I know that you this might even resonate with you, Robert, like as a business owner, where initially when you choose, we make a choice to like go on the path of purpose and like even starting your own coaching practices, which at the moment, you know, the feeling of like leaping out of the corporate world and starting your own business, it's like, mm-hmm. You know, like you have to deal with your fear of rejection and you have to deal with like money stuff and all of these things that have been maybe in the background. And when you move towards more fully expressed leadership and more alignment from a purpose perspective, it forces you to, in many ways, confront all of those things. And so for me, I really relate to these conversations as one and the same, where it's like your business will ask you to confront your deepest healing. Your leadership will ask you to confront the things that need healing. Yeah. And that's like, it's beautiful, but it's also challenging at moments. I don't know. Has that resonated with you? Like, do you feel like that's something that you see?
Yeah, because I was very good at, I don't know if we talked about this before we started recording, but you talked about segmenting and compartmentalizing a little bit. And I used to be very good at that. But as soon as I started taking on commitments, like starting my own work venture, my own business, or leaving a space that maybe wasn't entirely comfortable, but was very familiar, which is the corporate world, even though it's nonprofit, it was still corporate. Mm-hmm. I felt like I was being challenged to stop showing just one aspect of myself in this situation and then tailoring it differently to another one. All of my issues, my sense of purpose and healing, and also what motivates me and what makes me passionate about things and about my work, all were just in the same space all the time at the same time. And I think before it was easier for me to sort of like set that aside or don't talk so much in this manner when you're in this business meeting. But nowadays, I'm just not able to do it as well and just not wanting to do that. And I think a lot of people want to know how to be that rather than be this like constant performer in life. Does that make sense?
Oh my gosh, totally. Well, and I was just talking to someone about this earlier where there's this. I have been this person for so long who's been asking this question of like, particularly if you're in the self-development space or you're a healer or you're a coach, it's like, well, I don't feel like coaching completely encapsulates all of who I am or healing encapsulates all of who I am. And certainly if you're working at a corporate, like 9-to-5, more traditional job, there's even probably more of that segmentation. And it's like, there's this shift that feels like it's happening where people are, and a lot of the work that I know both of us have done, and which is, I mean, it's hard work in many ways. It's like, what is that? way of living your life that invites all of you to the table and stops ask, you know, you cease to ask yourself to segment and jettison parts of yourself, and like really everything is welcome. So that's been, it's been the last year or so for me.
Quite an undertaking. I'm curious, really curious to see how that develops. And, but, you know, backtracking a little bit, when you talk about the corporate world, I know you have a PhD in psychology, which I presume tend to be seen as easily applied and very accessible for something like the business corporate world. And you have a, I want to get this right, you have a PhD in industrial organizational psychology. And yet you are also Lauren, who is a meditation and intuition teacher, right? So how do all these different frameworks that you've been, that you have studied and trained under, which are quite different oftentimes, inform your coaching practice? You know, psychology, spirituality, business, healing. How does it come together for you now?
Another big question. It's such a good question. I have asked that. So I've sat down with my coach so many times and asked that question. And I'm like, how? What do I do with this?
It's not a coaching session, I swear.
It's because, well, and it's like, I think as humans, we want like a process, like we have all these tools and we're like, what is the puzzle that allows us to fit these things together? Or even if you're not a coach, right? Like if you're listening to this and you're not a coach and you're like, we've had all of these experiences that have given us tools and asking the question of like, what is the story that this tells? And like, what is this? How do these things come together? Like, it's a really normal question. And I don't have a simple answer to that. Really the way that it tends to work, well, first and foremost, like in terms of my journey, so much of it is just the culmination of like the experiences that I've had that I then bring to coaching. And it's not like a formulaic, like I sit down and we do this and this, but I think what it's allowed me to do, having that background, and I can speak a little bit more to it, but so yeah, my background's in industrial organizational psychology, which is basically psychology of work. It's basically, if you imagine all of the research on psychology and the things that make us tick, it's almost sort of taking those things and applying it to teams and organizations and asking the question, how do we support people in being more productive and happier? So my journey with it, like I started in this place of being so embedded in the academic world to the point that I was like, if anything can't be, if I can't measure it or it doesn't have a research basis, then I'm not going to pay any attention to it. So for me, some of these more esoteric things like astrology or human design were just, I'm like, I'm not doing anything with that. Like that's what it's like, hoo-ha, like it's not real. And was very like rule oriented and kind of insular in that way. And I think it limited me in many ways, but it was also really, I'm grateful for it because it had me develop an ability to use research and science in a way that allows people to kind of receive new information. Like I can very easily pull from psychological principles and research to explain why something is grounded in research or why to kind of help people with more of an analytical mind, wrap their mind around how something works. And that is something that I don't know that I would have gotten in any other way. So I'm really grateful for that. And then eventually it kind of, for me started realizing that it wasn't really where my passion lied or lay, and started looking at some of these other ways of living your life. So I started with meditation. I started studying intuition really from a place of trying to find myself. And the way that that looks now is I actually personally am much more comfortable in spiritual spaces. Like I'm much more comfortable speaking about emotion. I'm more comfortable speaking about healing. And like, that's really where I feel the most myself and most of what I work on with clients. It's like, what does your relationship look like to emotion? Like, how are you, you know, you're going through this really challenging thing at work. Where are you grasping and holding on really tightly versus surrendering? What is your, like your larger why about why you're doing this? And is that thing sufficient to do this hard thing? And is it aligned for you? Like all of these kind of big questions that support people in being more themselves and experiencing more fulfillment. And then I've also got the organizational psychology, which allows me to bring in other concepts like leadership and like looking at how people operate in teams. And, but I think the thing that it's been most useful for is there are certain people who just need that analytical way of thinking about the world, like before they can really move towards something. Mm-hmm. And it allows me, I think, to be a translator in many ways, because I can pull in that science, despite the fact that I am not personally one of those people who like needs to see all the research anymore, which was testament to like a lot of healing and development that I think I've done. Like I can kind of release that now. But
oh yeah, and it brings me in something I had stumbled upon recently about practice based on evidence, and how so much of it historically has been like more so about what evidence has been privileged over other evidence, who submitted the research, who was able to get funding for the research, and what are the health outcomes that those funders are looking for, right? So once I started getting into the nitty gritty of like zooming out even beyond whose names you see and what the research says, I was like, wow, this still feels a little bit like there's something more beyond everything that's already been perfectly established on paper. You know what I mean? So it's been so interesting to to be a little more critical. I mean, critical, but also understand where the assets and the benefits of it are at the same time. You know, another place where I couldn't compartmentalize. It was seeing a little bit of everything.
100%. Sometimes I think about it like we've all got our own religions, you know, everyone has their things that they really ascribe to and like hold fast to. And some of them are explicit. Like sometimes we identify as like Christian or Catholic or pagan or, you know, whatever. And then there are ones that are happening in the background. And oftentimes one of the sort of background religions is science. Science trumps everything. And it's not that science isn't valuable. It's incredibly valuable. And the question I hear you asking is like, science works because we have certain standards that we apply to data and that we apply to research as it moves through different journals and things like that. But who creates those standards? Mm-hmm. And even in the research community, this is something Brené Brown talks about a lot. She's like, why is qualitative data, so like numeric data, statistics, in many ways superior to like sociological or quantitative. Sorry, I said it backwards. I said quantitative is number, and then qualitative is like story and like tribal lore and people passing down stories from generations. That type of data tends to be rejected or not really prioritized. And that's colonialism. That's literally an offshoot of colonialism. And so it's not that necessarily one is better than the other. It's just noticing how collectively we tend to, like the way that we're socialized, we do tend to prioritize science and we do tend to be taught that like this is, you know, the numeric and the statistics is like comes first. And some people still need that to like understand things. And also asking that larger question of like, well, why do I need it? Why am I not listening to just people's experiences or whatever? It's an important question. And so to that point, I mean, even science, it's not perfect. It's really not. And so using that discernment is really key. So,
yeah. And in your work, you talk about, you know, creativity and intuition and how very much they come from the same place. But I know that intuition is very important in the way that we approach work and in our spiritual development. Yet it's also a very broad term, although people like Brené Brown have tried to define it as a combination of different components, like reason, like experience, like faith. How could somebody start to identify, what are some ways that you would recommend people can start to cultivate and practice and work with their intuition? And again, this is an arena that's going to be a little bit outside of like the strong, firm, black and white textbook structure or protocol. And in fact, you know, someone that we both know once mentioned the fact that intuition is not a part of the MCC training requirement to get an MCC certification. So for you, how can someone start to investigate, start to get curious with this thing that can feel and seem very nebulous?
Yeah, that's such a great question. There's so many different access points. The ones that I would recommend starting with, the two places I recommend starting for most people are, first off, if you don't already have one, cultivating a meditative practice. And the reason for that, meditation is an ancient practice that's been used in a number of different religions and different spiritual practices. And usually, like in most cases, we talk about it as something that it's like supports us with stress and like helps us come back to the present moment and develops mindfulness and all of these different kind of things. But what it also does, if you don't have a meditative practice, is like forces us to slow down and actually just land in our bodies. And I remember for me, the first time I ever really heard my intuition, I was kind of crazy. Like I had never really meditated, and I went on a 10-day silent meditation retreat. Have I ever told you the story?
No, but I love that's where you started.
I keep joking. I'm like, I probably should talk to my therapist about that. How I do the hardest thing first. Like I routinely do the hard. I'm like, I'm just gonna go like lock myself in a cabin in the woods for 10 days and not speak to anyone and just meditate. It was like, you know, 10 hours of meditation a day. It was crazy. I'm trying not to use the word crazy, but it was a hard place to start. But the experience that I had in that container was like this slowing down of life. Like we're so often we're focused on the next thing. We're focused on like so much of our attention is external. It's what people expect from us. It's what others' expectations. It's like the expectations in our job, what we need to go do to like go out and perform, that we sometimes like miss what's happening here. And for those of you who aren't watching this, I'm like pointing to my body. Mm-hmm. And so what meditation has us do is like, it's going to have you hear yourself for the first time. And some of the things that you hear will be thoughts and like brain chatter, because we all have that. And that's our mind's job is to chatter. And that's normal and healthy. And like something that doesn't mean you're doing it wrong. But the more that you learn to sit with that, when you are able to drop below the noise of the brain, you're going to be able to feel what feels true for you around certain things. And it's not something that I think we can necessarily plot out in like a perfect outline of like, your experience will be this, but that meditation tends to cultivate just this inner listening that is really important for developing your intuition. And so I always recommend that people start there, even if it's just 3 minutes a day, even if it's just 5 minutes a day, cultivating a practice of slowing down and listening internally to what's happening inside of you. Because oftentimes what happens is you develop that internal listening, and then you go out into the world and you start noticing your bodily sensations when you're about to say yes to something that you're a no to. You know, like you start noticing these moments where you're like, wow, I'm really jammed up in this situation. And why does this feel so awful or weird to me? And it's like, oh, because it's out of alignment. Like this isn't the community for me, or this isn't the training for me, or the job for me, or whatever. And that meditation piece is really, really important for that first layer. The second thing is memory is a really powerful thing when we're learning intuition. It's very, in many cases, you might be able to even go back and look at moments in your life where you've made pivotal decisions and what it felt like for you. Hmm. What did it feel like for you to be an absolute unapologetic hell yes to something? What did it feel like in your body? How did you make that decision? Was it like, did you make a pros and cons list? Was it very heady? How did that turn out for you? Once you then entered into that, like that thing that you were choosing, did it actually end up being aligned? And so a lot of it, by looking backwards, we can often identify these pivotal moments where we can identify like, oh, that's what my intuition felt like. My intuition was, in that moment, it was telling me not to move forward, but I told myself that it was a good idea and I did it anyway. And it's not, the purpose is not to look back and then beat ourselves up and be like, I should have known. Like we all have these, you know, these experiences that are in many ways are actually designed to teach us what it feels like to listen to our intuition or not to listen to our intuition. So oftentimes in hindsight, we can feel those mm-hmm. things, and that can get a lot of insight there. And then the third thing is, well, so really understanding, and it's kind of related to this, but starting to understand what your intuition actually, how it speaks to you. And I know you have some experience with this because we've studied with the same person.
Yeah. How do you identify that voice? Yeah.
Totally. So it's like for one of the things that I like know about you, Robert, like you're very musically inclined. Like And when that happens, sometimes you can literally hear, I don't know if this is actually true for you, but you might even hear like downloads or insights that just sort of drop in. Mm-hmm. Other people are very visual. So like in meditation, they close their eyes and they see scenes or they see colors. For other people, their body will talk to them. So you might feel like a tensing sensation or a releasing sensation. And so all of these things kind of build on each other, right? Because it allows us to actually drop into the present moment and start decoding what our intuition is actually saying to us. And it's all practice. Like, I'm still learning. I still have moments. I like teach this stuff and I still have moments where I make a decision. I'm like, oh, that my intuition was telling me something there and I didn't listen to it, or I didn't hear it, or I was moving too quickly, or whatever the case may be. So those are kind of the three different pieces.
Well, I love how you talk about intuition as a felt experience. You know, there's kind of something you describe, it's kind of a sensory experience, but there's definitely something to the idea that intuition and our emotions, or I guess I'll say our relationship to our feelings, really go hand in hand in how you develop it and where you're at and how you might practice it. So I know you're someone who talks about the importance and the value of understanding and not alienating or kind of almost looking down on feelings as a way to make strong decisions, as a way towards understanding. But based on my experience, you know, our emotions carry a lot of downloads, but it definitely is a practice to then try to apply it or try to translate it and all of that. So you've spoken about this in your work and on your podcast, which we'll get to in a little bit. But yeah, to me, it seems like intuition and emotion are deeply, deeply tied as far as something to work with.
100%. I love the topic of emotions. I'm just so fascinated by it. And I think actually one of the reasons I'm probably so fascinated by it is because I spent so long trying not to have emotions, you know, like I have a lot of them and my relationship to them historically was like, no, like we are not doing that. It's such an important part of intuitive development, because oftentimes this isn't the case for everyone, but oftentimes like when we finally start listening to ourselves, really listening to ourselves, like our intuition is housed in the same place that all of our emotions are. They're not necessarily the same. Sometimes there can be alignment between them and there can be information there about our intuition, but it's like when we silence our emotions, when we spend our lives trying not to feel things, we oftentimes also don't feel our intuition. And our emotions oftentimes can carry information about what's actually going on for us. And it's interesting because it's like a lot of I see this in the spiritual community a lot, where there's this, I don't know if you've had this experience, where sometimes you can see this, they're like two paradigms. They're two different ways of thinking about it, where there's the camp that's like, it's very stoic. It's like, we're always in control of our emotions. We just need to cultivate enough mindfulness and presence, and emotions are just noise in the system. And then there's kind of another camp emerging, which is like emotions are really, really, really important, and you can befriend them and like hold a lot of space for them. And that, you know, like that's a really important part of your development. Clearly I'm in that camp. And there is a little bit of a balance, you know, like there's some truth in both, where it's like, cause anything obviously out of balance can cause pain. So if we're like so stoic and so mindful that we don't give any space to our emotions, that can be a problem. And if we're like, we allow so much space for them that they run everything, that can also cause pain. So it's like, how do you sort of learn to be with both? And the mindfulness piece is really key for that. But the other piece that's been, have we ever talked about internal family systems?
I don't think we have, like between the two of us, but that's something, I know that that's a framework that's become very popular and very important for many people's understanding of what gets in the way of intuition, you know, through what we grew up with.
Totally. So if for those of us who are listening who have no idea what internal family systems is, internal family systems is a paradigm. In the spiritual community, they also sometimes call it parts work. But the whole idea is that if you think about your insides as almost like a family, or maybe, you know, I don't know if you're a sports person, you can think of it like a basketball team. And at any given moment, there are certain parts of you, and that you can personify that are on the court. So you might have, like, your intuition might be one part. Your, I don't know, for me, I have like an achiever part that really likes performing well and like achievement and success and like is very kind of competitive and all that. Like, maybe there's that part. And then you might have a part that has a lot of anger, or you might have a part that has a lot of shame. And it's only when those parts don't have their needs met that you'll experience something will be out of sort of gets out of whack in the system, and you start experiencing discomfort. So what's interesting is that, like, when we start giving space for our emotions from an IFS or an internal family systems perspective, you can go like, okay, so part of me is activated right now, or part of me is really sad, or part of me is, I have this, like, all of this anger coming up. Recently, this was like a big thing for me. I was like, I have a ton of anger coming up. What's going on? And rather than being like, oh, I shouldn't be angry, right? I don't like myself when I'm angry. Actually becoming more intimate with that part of yourself and saying, wait, hold on. Like, the angry part of me, what's she or they, it doesn't even, it might not even be human. Like, if you kind of personify it in your head, but this angry part, like, what are they like? What do they care about? What do they want me to know? What's the thing that they need from me? You know, what function does this part of me play? Like, how has this part protected me in the past? Maybe. Is there something this part would rather be doing with its time? Like, if I approach it with just absolute unconditional love and get curious, I can get so much more information about what's actually going on for me. And it can, it's like, it's sort of weird, because it's like part of intuition. Now I'm sort of in an intellectual debate in my head about whether or not that counts as intuition, and it doesn't really matter, but it's giving you information about what's happening internally for you and what you need, which is, can be part of intuition, but can also be really important so that you can hear yourself. Because oftentimes we can't hear ourselves because there's something that's out of balance. That's like dominant. It's kind of like we're driving a school bus and it's like jumping in the driver's seat and like grabbing the wheel. Mm-hmm. And like, when everything's in balance, you're driving and you've got all of your parts and you're like, hey, I love all of you. Thanks for being here. You're all important. And it's like, when someone's need isn't being met, it's like, Robert, get out of the front seat. And it's like kicking you out. And you're like, oh, this is awful. Why is this happening? And so rather than punching it in the face, you go like, okay, what's going on? Like, do you need a bathroom break? Like, what, you know?
Yeah. Like, do you need a pit stop? I love that idea. Oh, it's because, you know, it's kind of, I think it can help with the way that we can sabotage things when we start to judge all the things that we've decided we don't like, or that about ourselves, or the things that are bad about us, such as some of our emotions, right? And, you know, you talk about like, what's the word for it? I always think of like, it's an ecosystem, or I've heard it being described as you as a person, Robert or Lauren, is kind of an ecosystem, both physiologically, physically, but all the other parts of us, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. And being able to do parts work, or being able to integrate these different aspects of us, you know, I had always thought that was kind of a natural concept, because we all have different sides. You know, you can understand the way that I would present myself or communicate when I'm about to perform on the piano versus when I'm just hanging out, relaxing. You know, they're going to come off slightly differently, but that's very much intentional and on purpose at the same time. And it's all me. It's still me, right? So I think, but once you get to the spiritual, you can really start to get clear and really acknowledge this, which I think can be very empowering for people. And this brings me to the word that I hadn't really heard before, but that's a part of your podcast, which is Vereditas. And everyone should go check out Vereditas Coaching Podcast. And you have dedicated an episode to kind of explaining why the word was such a breakthrough moment for you, what it means. And are you willing to give like a short version of that, just to get people to understand why it translates for you and why it encapsulates your work?
Totally. Yeah. And it's so funny, because I quite literally recently rebranded. Although, I don't know, what does it mean to rebrand? I know there's like a whole system that professional branders and marketers do. I didn't do that, all of that, but I rebranded my business from Lauren Borden Coaching to Vereditas. And There were a few different reasons I did it, but Veriditas means, it's a Latin word that was initially coined by Hildegard von Bingen. She was a German philosopher, nun, herbalist. Actually, herbalist is probably wrong, like botanist. She was fascinated with plants, and she was fascinated with this idea that anything that comes from the earth, like humans or plants, animals, even like rocks and earth in many ways, has this ability to naturally grow, evolve, and regenerate to the point that, you know, if you like hurt a living organism, or if there's some sort of damage, that it has an innate ability to heal and then grow. And there's this sort of lushness and ability for things to bloom and like explode into life that she saw, that was just really inherent to like all of the things on our planet. And it's such a, for me, hearing that, a word that does such a good job at articulating, in my opinion, what we do as coaches and healers, where rather than, I think sometimes, especially as a like a highly sensitive empath, like intuitive person, also like recovering codependent, all of this stuff, it's very easy as a coach to be like, it is on me to fix you. It's on me to support you in getting the thing. And you are only hiring me and working with me because you don't know how to do it yourself. Like that's the sort of shadowy aspect of coaching. And it completely misses the point. It misses this beautiful thing that humans have, where there's a natural ability. We have a natural ability to grow. Like even in our most, oftentimes, like I can think about moments where I've been in like really deep depression, or I've been in like, I've had like mental health moments where I'm like, oh, that was like really unpleasant. And at the surface looked like a problem, where I'm like, there was something moving there. There was something being born inside of me. There was something that was growing and evolving that I couldn't maybe see at the time. But once you're sort of out of it, you're like, whoa, okay, I can see what was happening there. And when we, it's like Veriditas is really this idea of like, what if you can radically trust yourself? What if you can radically trust the divine and this process that you're moving through? And what if no one needs to save you? And what that allows from a healing and a coaching perspective and all of these things that you and I do is like, it allows us to partner with people versus the old kind of like guru model. Or like putting pressure on us to know everything, you know? And I just think that there's so much possibility inside of that model, because it allows us to then create something larger than ourselves when we partner together, versus one person needing to be in like savior mode. And so it's something that I often come back to, that's a guiding light for my business and just my life, is like, to what degree do I feel connected to the divinity inside of this person right now? And if it's ever anything less than like, you know, like 90%, I'm like, okay, something I need to sort of take a moment for myself and like recalibrate and refocus and like maybe do a little bit of inner work. And that is oftentimes the place when I see also like coaching and teaching other coaches, like we do our best work when we're connected to it. So
Yeah. Everyone check out the podcast, and the way that you dive into emotions, all these different concepts, and also blending it with personal experience, right? Our stories, who we are, where we come from, what we remember. Thank you for doing that work. This conversation could be a lot longer. I'm well aware,
it
but that is sort of like, who's gonna listen? So with that in mind, I want to say I can't wait to like keep having conversations with you. But for now, if people want to find you online, if people want to work with you, check out some of your work. Where can they find you?
Yes, please absolutely come find me. So my Instagram is Veriditas, so it's spelled V. Some of the spelling, like online, is like varies a little bit depending on who you talk to about Veriditas. But the way that I chose to spell it was Veriditas coaching.com, Veriditas coaching on Instagram, or lauren@veriditascoaching.com. And yeah, would just be happy to connect and hear more about what you got going on in your life.
Yes, and start to understand ourselves a little bit more. So, thank you so much for your generosity and your time today, Lauren. It's really nice to be able to catch up with you again.
Yeah, it's so good to see you, Robert. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for tuning in. And if you'd like to connect with me, please reach out at www.robertkwangcoaching.com. And also feel free to reach out to me on Instagram at robertkwangcoaching.